You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
This is good radio, gentlemen. Oh, well, thank you, kind sir or madam on the text line who is responding. We certainly enjoy that. Ray Ratto in with Gianna and I this afternoon. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody.
Happy Valentine's Day.
So romantic, it really is. Let's talk about what we thought we were going to get, Ray, in the first half and what we actually got out of the NBA in the first half. First of all, where do you stand on Warrior regular season basketball? Do you say it's something we have to suffer through, or do you lean forward? To me, it's my favorite TV show. It really is. You can't give me enough Warriors regular season basketball. I love it. I do. I don't know why. It's my favorite thing to watch on TV.
Well, what's the alternative that you would be considering?
Fair enough. My wife does a lot of Bravo, a lot of like animal rescue things.
A lot of Real Housewives. Gotcha.
But for me, I just love it. And this was the year, and last year was a year where their interest in the regular season was supposed to wane, which was supposed to wane my interest in the regular season. They're not bought in. They're not trying hard. For a year where the regular season wasn't supposed to matter at all, this first half was just kind of awesome. I mean, it really was. You had so much drama. You got like four different versions of the Warriors before they unveiled the latest version with DeMarcus Cousins. I think this has been maybe the most interesting first half since 24-0 to start the year in year number two of this entire Kerr era.
Well, you said it yourself. They've done a series of star turns. I mean, there's been basically four separate seasons already. There's the happy times early on.
10-1.
Yeah, there's the Green v. Durant blow up and what comes after that. There's, you know, in conjunction with Curry going down and then Green going down, finding out how many players the Warriors can afford to lose before they become an average team. And in conjunction with all that, the Durant-centric, the ball's in his hands all the time team, which, you know, doesn't work nearly as well. And now the Cousins team. So basically what they've given you is four different versions of themselves. And most teams can't do that. So, yeah, I get why this season rivets you, because it's the plot line has never gone on for very long. It gives you something new every month or so, whether you're asking for it or not. Last year, there wasn't the plot line was the same all the time.
You're right.
Houston's going to win the West, and then we'll see what happens in the Western Conference Finals.
Outside of the Rockets, the Warriors' chief opponent last season was their own apathy. This year,
it wasn't their apathy. It was that they knew that there were times that they wasted energy, not only chasing the 73 wins, but the year after that, because they are getting older. And player maintenance is now more important than ever before. I'm not using load maintenance. That's an
idiotic. Yeah, thank you. No load management here.
No. Player maintenance matters. It matters a lot, especially with a team of 30-year-olds. So, yeah, there are times when they didn't, you know, go pedal to the metal.
You know what bothers me, though? I don't think the fact that they went for 73 has anything to do with why they didn't win the NBA championship.
No. That's a different thing entirely. They didn't win the NBA championship because, you know, they missed every shot they took in Game 7.
Well, and Draymond was suspended and Boga got hurt and Harrison Barnes couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. You're right about all that. But to me,
no, but they still win it all if they make one jump shot in the last 5 minutes of Game 7.
Yeah.
So that's why they didn't win in 16.
So why do we keep on referencing the pursuit of 73 as some sort of it's destructive prophecy that they can never approach again?
It wasn't a destructive prophecy, except insofar as they knew that chasing that number wasn't worth it. It's not about, let's see if we can win 74. It's how do we get through June? That's what it was. The winning 73 was not in and of itself damaging. But they knew that if we start chasing 73 like it's a focus, we lose focus on the bigger thing at a time when we're all getting a little older and need to mind our bodies better.
Getting back to this season, I think Kerr actually relishes the chance to sell reinvention in this locker room. I think it keeps
the team dialed in
and motivated. Well, I mean, to a point, I think he does want Draymond ball dominant. He wants Magic Draymond to run this team's offense. I think he's very comfortable with that. The problem is that the ball is going to DeMarcus too much right now, but that's by design. They're trying to work the rust off the guy. They want to get him. They want to get him to fall in love and buy in mentally on a night by night basis. And overfeeding him is the good way to get the fat kid's attention.
No, I also think that they're trying to figure out how to use him best come the series against Clint Capela or the series against Steven Adams. This is all exploratory stuff.
Yeah, trial and error.
I don't think they are forcing the ball to him because they think that's who they need to be next. They need to see everything that he can give them when the games really matter against a team with a big-time center. And I should include Utah in that discussion, too, in case they end up playing them in the first round, because Rudy Gobert can be a...
Rudy Gobert just served a couple people the lunch the other night.
Yeah. I mean, Rudy Gobert is a hell of a player. And so is Steven Adams. Clint Capela's always given him trouble. Their weakness is still the dominant low-post guy. So I think they want to see the depth and breadth of what DeMarcus Cousins can give them. And it's not about him becoming ball-centric. It's about we need to see everything he can give us so that there aren't any surprises come the postseason. So I'm not troubled by that. And I think people who are once again, are missing the forest for the trees.
By the time we get to the end of this regular season and it's playoff time for the Warriors, what do you think the general narrative about the direction they're traveling in will be? That they're more beatable than ever before, or they're less beatable than ever before?
Neither. They're less beatable than they were a year ago, but they're more beatable than they were 2 years ago or 3 years ago because they still aren't a terribly deep team. They still really only go seven deep. You know, they go hot and cold on guys like Quinn Cook and Alphonso McKinney. They have flaws, but it is hard to take advantage of those flaws for other teams unless they play a near-perfect game. And when you have to beat them four times in seven games, that's almost impossible to do. That's why the cushion of having Cousins is so valuable to them, because now that's one less thing they have to worry about when another team comes at them. Because ultimately, the reason why Houston is not going to be the team that scares them the most, because Houston's not deep enough. Oklahoma City wants to be deep enough. They just got Markieff Morris today.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're clearly trying to load up so that they can go six or seven or maybe even eight deep. I mean, that's how they're approaching this. You know, Utah's never going to be deep enough.
That's how Portland's approaching this. Portland runs like 9-10 dudes at you.
Well, but some of those guys are not, they're not going to see much in the postseason. Because everybody's bench shortens.
Right.
So, I mean, Oklahoma City...
You're not giving Zach Collins a whole bunch of postseason minutes?
No, he'll get some because he's shown that he can get in the Warriors' grill work. But is he going to be a difference maker? Of course not. You know, that's the thing about the Warriors that is most fascinating this year is that they're a bunch of different jigsaw puzzles. And not just Kerr and the coaching staff, but the players themselves have had to put together all those jigsaw puzzles on the fly. And I think it appeals to their intellects, to their vanity about how well they know basketball. But it can be a strain because now you have to reinvent yourself. Now you have to reinvent yourself again. Now you have to reinvent yourself a third time. Now, you know, all while people are saying, well, where's Kevin Durant going to end up next year? They don't care about next year. Next year will come soon enough. They're worried about right now, and right now being this season, because if they win three in a row, now the debate about their legacy is different. If they're four out of five, now you could start thinking about comparing them to those Bulls teams. You still can't compare them to the Celtics. That's not going to happen.
Right.
But, you know, the Lakers team that won three in a row, you know, they will have, you know, they will have done something genuinely special.
Right. Four out of five puts them in a conversation that even their greatest detractor can't deny them entry to. I mean, it really is a special thing. And then when we talk about what might keep Kevin Durant around, I mean, how could you not be basketball curious enough to try to win four in a row? The one thing Jordan's never done, LeBron's never done. If you're looking to do that one thing, Kevin Durant, that's going to get people to say, you're special all by yourself, you individual you, that to me is one thing available that I think should make him want to stick around more than anything else.
I think, I mean, look, when you try to figure out Kevin Durant,
Like, that's a bad idea right there.
Well,
right?
No, it's not a bad idea. I mean, he's a complicated guy in a lot of ways. And I think one of the reasons why people keep thinking that he wants to go somewhere else is because they've decided that he wants to see if he can be the most important player in the NBA. And he's found out in Oakland that he's never going to be more important than Stephen Curry.
You should have known that before he got here, though.
No, you can't know that till you see it. Because Curry is, you can make a case that LeBron James is more special than Stephen Curry. But in this area, there is an attachment to Stephen Curry that is based on A, the fact that he's been here longer than anybody else.
He's the son.
B, he's reinvented the way guard play is performed. I mean, he's not just a generational player. He's one of the three or four guys in the history of the sport who have changed the way people look at the sport. You know, Wilt Chamberlain was one of those guys.
Right.
You know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar didn't even change the sport. Michael Jordan changed the sport. Magic Johnson changed the sport. You know, and Curry is now one of those guys. And it's to his great, he's been incredibly lucky that he's been on a team where he can do that. Because he couldn't change the sport if they had gotten their way and he had ended up in New York. Because you're surrounded by different players. You have to stop.
Don't you change anything. We're coming on back with more Ray. We're also going to get into a little Antonio Brown coming up next segment with Ron Cook, who covers the Steelers back in Pittsburgh. That's coming up this afternoon. So is Brian Geltzeiler. A bunch on the way. The one and only Gianna. Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Pleasure to have you along this afternoon. Thanks for stopping on by. Thanks to Ray Ratto for stopping on by to hang out with us today and tomorrow here on 95.7 The Game. Ray, you having a good time so far?
I'm doing this for the money.
There you go. It's nice to see the passion translate right over the air into pure, pure emotion. Thank you, Ray. 888
You want honesty or you want...
No, I'm kidding.
Keep it real, Ray. Yeah. Keep it real.
Look at it this way. If we wanted sunshine... It wouldn't have been you.
Oh, absolutely not. No, I'm Johnny Bringdown.
I will say this: you've actually brought more sunshine, I think, than we've had any day this week. Though, I mean, it stopped raining at least for a little while, and that could be just because Ray is here. We've been talking about what we've expected.
I'm inside, so it stopped raining outside. If they could figure out a way to make it rain inside, they would.
Oh, it's not.
We've been talking about what we sort of expected out of the NBA in this first half. Maybe a few things we haven't expected. I thought that the Lakers were going to be a West threat. I didn't expect them to pretty much trip over their own chemistry in the name of trying to find their way to the playoffs, but it looked like that's what happened. I didn't expect to see a team that was either going to be out of the playoffs or an 8 seed, depending on whether or not people can just get happy again. But that's really what's going on here. I mean, there is they sowed an awful lot of I'm not happy to be here in their own locker room. And now they have to come back and play through the trade that never happened. What did you think, Ray, of the Lakers when they were conceived? And what did you think to the fact that they stepped on their own toe along the way here?
Well, the head coach and general manager missed 18 games. That's for starters. secondly, they were so impatient to get to the next level of who they were, that they first assumed LeBron James is worth 25 games to us. He's going to get us to 60. And that's a hard ask for a guy who's, you know, in his 34 year. Secondly, they have been working very hard to get the guy to play with LeBron. They failed on Leonard. They failed on George. You know, they tried and they have failed so far with Anthony Davis. You've got young team that knows it's not going to be together, and they're all 19 and 20, and they're going, well, why the hell am I trying? I'm going to be in New Orleans in a year. I think they assumed, as a lot of people assume in basketball, that you just bring in a big name and everything gets better. Well, it doesn't. I mean, one of the reasons why the Warriors are the Warriors is because, one, their most important player is not a guy who wears his ego on his sleeve. Stephen Curry has an enormous ego, but he doesn't use it to beat on his teammates.
Right.
And they put together a great two guard in Klay Thompson, They discovered Draymond Green.
Pieces fit.
Yeah, the pieces more than fit. They fit philosophically. They fit emotionally. They basically like each other. If and when Kevin Durant leaves, it's not going to be because he didn't like his teammates. It's going to be because he has other things in mind for himself. But for the most part, the best teams are teams that are greater than the sum of its parts. The Lakers are not better than the sum of its parts. I think LeBron got there, decided he didn't like the roster he was playing on, and promptly said, well, we need to get Rajon Rondo in here, and we need to get Lance Stephenson in here, and we need to veteran up this team. That's the first step in convincing your young players they aren't good enough. Then he gets hurt, they bottom out, and that basically creates all the discussion about Anthony Davis, listing all the young players as the pieces that are going to get shipped out for him. So now they know they have no future in L.A. if the plan is to be followed. And that, frankly, I think depressed and pissed off all of them to the point where they're not burning with optimism's flame anymore. They're not seeing the magic of how LeBron James can make you better.
It feels
they haven't given up, but their care in their product has diminished because they know the best they can hope for is they're going to be gone.
It feels like for the very first time, a group of players on a team has turned on LeBron James as much as he could turn on them and demand that they be included in trade for another player. Do you take any schadenfreude in the fact that their plans for Anthony Davis were blown up by Dell Demps? I mean, this is the hill that Demps dies on, and I love that he's sacrificed himself in the name of small market justice for all of us. I really kind of do.
Well, he didn't sacrifice himself. Gail Benson sacrificed himself.
Sure.
Because she's the one who basically said, we are not trading him to them.
Right.
I mean, Dell Demps, if that was the best offer,
he should have taken it.
Well, he should have been talking to them. The fact that he wasn't even talking to them about it tells me everything I need to know about who made this decision. And it was Gail Benson, the owner. So in that way, I don't give him as much credit. And ultimately, Anthony Davis is going to end up with the Lakers anyway. The only difference is by the time he gets there, LeBron's going to be in his 36th year. And now you will be able to start seeing some of the pieces, the parts falling off. You know, he's going to be belching up blue smoke from time to time. It's the window with LeBron James is a short one, and it may end up with him not having that great second piece that he wanted.
What's the next lever he pulls as he tries to negotiate the rest of this season? Do you think he tries to get Luke Walton fired before it's all said and done? Do you think LeBron's got enough juice to stage a war of words publicly with Magic Johnson?
No, because he loses that.
Okay.
I mean, LeBron James is nobody's fool. So he's not going to, that's the hill that he dies on, because Magic Johnson is always going to matter more than LeBron James, because Magic Johnson's pro career started there and he was always a Laker, and that counts. The fact is, he's not going to try to get Luke Walton fired because there's no benefit to it. You know, because this is not a coaching issue. This is, you know, and he's certainly not going to do it while this season is over. He's going to let this play out, and then Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka will probably take care of that, or Magic Johnson, because if they don't make the playoffs again, they can justify firing him. You know, well, you got here, nothing changed. Now, that's a facile answer because everything changed, but it didn't change well. But somebody must be blamed for this. And it will be Walton. So LeBron James doesn't have to lift up a finger anymore on that. And, you know, and frankly, even if he had gotten Luke Walton fired, what difference would it have made with this team and Tyronn Lue? None.
No.
Because this is not a coaching issue. This is a chemistry issue. And LeBron's coach coming in doesn't make that chemistry better. It doesn't make it worse, but it doesn't make it any better. So the Lakers, you know, are in all likelihood probably going to miss the playoffs unless LeBron decides to have the ball more than James Harden. and just decide he's, I'm going to win this on my own.
It's just not in his DNA to do that, and never really has been. I don't think it's going to become part of his DNA before the end of this year.
I think it will be if...
Is there any doubt that the NBA would love to see a Warrior-Laker 1-8 matchup to begin the playoffs, though? I mean, my God. That would be a monster.
I don't know if it would be a monster, because I think...
Curiosity monster.
Yeah,
maybe not competition
for
monster.
For a game.
Yeah.
For a game. But I think there, you know, there are other matchups that appeal more, because this is an unpleasant Laker team. I mean, whether you hate the Lakers or like them, a lot of their teams over the decades have been fun to watch. This team is not fun to watch.
What would you rather see? Warriors, Lakers, Warriors, Kings?
I think it's important to the Kings that they finally get in, and trying to develop at least the shards of a rivalry with the team 90 miles down the road would do them a world of good. Do I think it would be a long, drawn-out, interesting series? Not particularly. But they've got something. But the Kings have some things that are fun to watch. I think it'd be more interesting than Warriors-Clippers. It'd be more interesting, I think, than Warriors-Jazz. But I think if you ask the Warriors, they'd probably rather have the Clippers. They'd probably rather have the Kings. They certainly don't want to open with the Jazz. And the Lakers are just weird enough that, you know, it could bother them a bit. They'd win the series, but
it could give them headaches.
It could give them a headache that might rear its head later in the playoffs.
And look, Curry can shoot anywhere, but he doesn't like shooting at Staples Center. Not, at least not when the lights are drawn up for the Lakers. And against the Clippers, it's a little bit better. But against the Lakers, there's something weird about the lighting in that building. He doesn't really like it. 888-957-9570 is the number. We're about to turn our attention back to one of the biggest rumors in the NFL. Antonio Brown wants out of Pittsburgh. We're about to go to Pittsburgh to talk to Ron Cook, who covers the Steelers for the Post-Gazette. He's also the co-host of the Cook and Joe Midday Show on 93.7 The Fan. Back east. So we're going to have him on in just a moment. Real quick, though, Tommy in San Francisco with a question about Anthony Davis before we turn our attention to Antonio Brown. What do you got, Tommy?
Hey, how's it going? First off, hey, Damon. There's a FM rock and roll station that you already know. I don't want to say the name. But I'll tell you right now, your voice, I swear to God, sounds just like Lamont. Lamont and Tinelli. I don't know if you know them.
Yeah, I know them very well.
I just like them.
I'll take it. Lamont's a good guy all day long, so thank you.
Okay, good. Yeah, it drives me nuts. So, basically, this is for Ray. You just said that Anthony Davis is going to be in a Laker uniform, and I just want to know, where are you getting that from? I'd like to know.
Because when he becomes a free agent, that's where he's going to want to go, because everything he has indicated is that he wants to go there. I'm presuming once he's a full free agent and, you know, this current contract runs out, that he's going to go to where he wants to go. And I see no issue with the Lakers paying him every dime they possibly can to get him. That's where I'm getting it from.
Yeah. Signs pointing to...
He's not going to be a Laker this year. I don't think he's going to be a Laker next year. He's going to be wherever they decide to trade him for a year. But after that, he's going to end up as a Laker. Now, I think that's in 2 years.
Right. It's the reason why people suspect that Kawhi Leonard is eventually going to end up in Los Angeles, even though he's in Toronto right now.
Well, they think he's going to end up with the Clippers, right, not
exactly,
the Warriors,
but
not the Lakers.
But I got the city right. Anyways, I got this city right, too. The city is Pittsburgh. That's where you find Ron Cook's work in the Post-Gazette. He's a sports columnist, a host on a midday show, 93.7 The Fan. And thank you very much, Ron, for joining us today. I wanted to get your feel on Antonio Brown, who, to me, is a talented player who's got a degree of boobery around him that is officially a red flag. Thank you so much for joining. I got Ray Ratto in the show today as well. Good to have you aboard, Ron. How are you?
Well, I'm delighted to be there, and I'm even doing it because you have Ray on board. I don't even know. If I'd have known for sure he would be there, I don't know that I would have committed to this.
If it helps at all, shut up.
Ray, how are you, my friend?
Hi, honey. How are you?
Well, we've been talking about Antonio a little bit back here, like 20 hours a day every day since he walked out on the team at the end of the season. It's an absolute joke and nightmare here. I mean, I've been around here a long time. Ray can tell you, Damon, how old I am. I watched Swan and Stallworth, Hall of Famers. Antonio's the best receiver I've ever seen in Pittsburgh. But, I mean, he's an idiot. And he walked out on his team for no apparent good reason. And he's just absolutely turned into a diva. If you want him in Oakland or San Francisco, you can have him. But he's a great player, a great player.
Why did things go wrong? Why on this Valentine's Day can you tell us, Ron, that he wants to break up with the Steelers?
You know, this hasn't just started at the end of the year. I mean, there was speculation at the end of the year that he and Ben had some sort of incident. The game before in New Orleans, he had 14 catches for 185 yards and two touchdowns. He was targeted 18 times, and then apparently something set him off at practice the Wednesday before the last game. But this goes back. In minicamp, he had a meltdown where he basically said he feels suffocated. The media isn't giving him his space. Yet he demands the attention. He shows up at training camp in a helicopter, for God's sake. He's quoted as saying, you know me, guys, I don't like to call attention to myself. Right. He has an incident in the spring where he allegedly threw stuff off a balcony. He has a child abuse thing, a domestic abuse here. Just in January, there's a road in Pittsburgh called McKnight Road. He was driving 110 miles an hour on that one day. Pled guilty to that or didn't show up. That was just Tuesday. He didn't show up. So it's been one thing after another with this guy. It's not just one thing. He got big money, a big head to go with it, and it's been an absolute disaster. Although, you know, he plays great on Sunday. That's the dilemma here. Mike Tomlin created this monster, but I sympathize in a way, A, because Antonio's so good, and B, he has been the hardest worker on the team. If he was slacking off, it would be one thing. And I even asked Tomlin about this a couple years ago when he was taking some excessive celebration penalties. I said, how can you let him do this to your team, taking these penalties? This is before the NFL allowed the celebration. He goes, he's a grown man. What do you want me to do, bench him? And, I mean, that's basically the attitude they've taken with him. What do you want me to do with him?
But would it have mattered if he put his foot down 2 years ago or 3 years ago? Or would that not have just hastened his desire to leave earlier?
Let him do whatever he wants.
Well, no. What I'm asking, because I don't have the answer, you're the one with the boots on the ground, is he seems from the outside to be the sort of guy who was going to be on his own agenda, whether they told him not to do something or not. And if I'm wrong, correct me, but it seems like Tomlin putting his foot down and not letting him do all the things that he wanted to do would only have hastened the process by which he gets out of town. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think you are a little bit. I think if he'd have taken care of this a couple years ago, it might not have been so bad. And you remember the Facebook Live stuff after the playoff game in Kansas City a couple years ago. Tomlin was infuriated by that because that kind of the sanctity of the locker room was violated and everything else. But yet, after the season ended, Art Rooney II gave him the biggest contract for a wide receiver in history and was quoted as saying, Antonio's... these are small distractions, emphasis on small. So the owner has actually enabled him as well, and it's to the point where he doesn't show up for meetings. He's late all the time, late for practice. He does whatever he wants, and I blame that on Rooney and Tomlin. Absolutely, I do.
Ron Cook joining us here on the Damon Bruce Show. Ray Ratto in with us this afternoon. We're talking Antonio Brown with a man who's covered him firsthand in Pittsburgh. Before things went south, really at the end of this year, did you have any red flags on him that really bothered you, like right up until things got to the point of no return this year? Because it sounds like he was a hard worker. He's the best player you've ever seen. He might not like the situation anymore. Sometimes a change of scenery can do a guy good. And I'll tell you, I used to be an East Coaster, and I moved out to California, and I was happier out here almost instantly. Maybe this guy changes his perspective with a move, and he needs a fresh start. Or do you think that diva behavior will be the only behavior he's defined by going forward, no matter where he lands.
Yeah, that's my feeling, guys. I think he's one of these guys that would rather have 10 catches, 150 yards in a loss, than 5 catches for 60 yards in a win. I just think he wants to be the center of attention. He wants to win, don't get me wrong. He works hard to be the great player that he is, but he wants to be about him. He wants to be the guy that causes them to win. And he does stuff on the field. I've been told by repeated people he runs the wrong routes 3 or 4 times a game. He just kind of freelances out there, and Roethlisberger's so good that he can kind of think with them. But occasionally Ben will throw an interception at a place where he thinks Antonio's going to be, and he isn't there. It's just hard to explain the diva that he has become here. And it really ticked his teammates off the last game. And I this is another thing I blame Tomlin and Rooney for. He kind of went AWOL Wednesday before the Sunday last game. Now, they had to beat Cincinnati to even have a chance at the playoffs. Went AWOL. Tomlin talked to him Friday morning, told him to get an MRI on his knee. Didn't. Blew him off on Saturday, and then shows up Sunday expecting to play. Tomlin benches him, but he doesn't suspend him. So he doesn't rest. He gets his paycheck instead of a suspension where he doesn't get his check. And I can guarantee you his teammates were ticked. You know, we got to show up and play to get our check. He goes AWOL and he still gets a paycheck. I think Tomlin and Rooney really blew it right there. Really blew it.
So what kind of team should reach out to get him? I mean, putting it all in one big group, you know, the disruptions he can cause versus his unquestioned talent. What kind of team would be best served making a run at him right now?
Well, they better have a great quarterback, and they better be willing to make him the focal point of the offense and better be ready to throw it to him at all times. He doesn't want another receiver to steal his thunder. I think that was a big part of what happened here. Juju Smith-Schuster had a great year. His teammates voted him MVP, and there's a lot of speculation that Antonio's ticked that he wasn't picked as the MVP. He's been picked before a couple of times, but Smith-Schuster kind of stole his attention. And the other thing that Smith-Schuster's really good at is working social media. He's out there. The town loves him. He's taken a lot of attention away from Antonio, and Antonio doesn't like it. So you better be willing to have a great quarterback, and you better be willing to make him the focus of the team. I'm starting to wonder, with everything that's happened here, if the Steelers are going to be able to get more than a third or fourth round pick for him, which is kind of sad, isn't it, considering how good he is.
Wow, I'll tell you, I'll take my chances and flip you a third for this guy right now and just hope. That's how much talent he has. That's how much I think the 49ers could use talent like that. Kyle Shanahan could draw up some touchdowns with a talent like that. Ron, thank you very much for joining us.
He's already shown he wants to be there. Didn't he wear the Jerry Rice, the 49ers uniform? That really went over big here in Pittsburgh, too, I can tell you that.
I bet. Who is bigger persona non grata, bigger enemy of the state of the city of Pittsburgh? Is it Brown? Is it Le'Veon Bell, or to this day, is it still Bobby Bonilla?
Hey, Bonilla's an angel compared to that. No, I mean, Le'Veon, too. I mean, at least that was a business decision. He didn't even have a contract. They put the tag on him, but he couldn't come in unless he signed. Antonio still has 3 years left, and there's already the talk about he wants to renegotiate. That's another thing, Ray. Wherever he goes, somebody's going to have to deal with his contract, and he wants to do a new one right now with 3 years left. Good luck with that.
There you go.
I'm not signing him, so I don't have to worry about it.
Ron, thank you very much. How grumpy was Ray Ratto the first time you met him?
You know what? Ray is one of the sweetest, kindest, gentlest men I've ever met. And I mean,
fall down a flight of stairs.
You know I'm lying now, don't you?
I was about to say,
a check
is cleared.
Thanks for having me.
Ron, thank you. That was great. Ron Cook, your best friend, Ray Ratto, from the Post-Gazette in Pittsburgh.
I mean, I think he's a little too close to Antonio Brown to sort of have the clearest view.
Sounds a little spurned by the whole situation.
No, I don't think he's spurned as much as you know, he knows what the Steelers have traditionally stood for, and he's not it. That said, he made a couple of pretty salient points, which is starting with the contract, because if you walk in wanting to renegotiate with 3 years left and you want to be the center of the offense, now you're asking for top dollar and you're asking for a guy who takes pride in a multivariate offense like Kyle Shanahan. No, change everything you believe for me. I think that is probably where this breaks down. That, you know, it's, you know, you can discipline him all you want, but I still think inherently he's a guy who, if he needs to be the center of attention, it doesn't matter who's around him. And Kyle Shanahan does not strike me as a guy who is going to change his entire offense to serve one guy's needs. He didn't do that with Julio Jones in Atlanta. He didn't do that in any of his other stops when he had lesser talent. I mean, he's a guy who likes to do a lot of different things with his offense. So I don't know that there's going to be a lot of a steady opportunity of 14 catches and 19 targets for 158 yards.
I can tell you this, the one guy that the 49ers won't be targeting is Pierre Garçon, who got released, will come back and take one last look at one of the least productive contracts and players the Niners ever signed in free agency. Oh, and speaking of money, we were saying that Steve Kerr didn't get his money's worth, yet they still charged him for what he said to officials last night. Steve Kerr fined $25,000 for verbally abusing the referees last night in Portland. We'll come back to verbally abuse you a little bit more next here on the Damon Bruce Show.
Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
I'm starting to wonder, with everything that's happened here, if the Steelers are going to be able to get more than a third or fourth round pick for him, which is kind of sad, isn't it, considering how good he is?
I mean, it's not sad at all if you're the team maybe having to give up the pick to acquire a talent like that. That was Ron Cook joining us from Pittsburgh to talk about Antonio Brown. He oscillated between somebody who really admired him for a moment and then somebody whose trust in the player was clearly severed severely. And he sounded a little jilted. He and Rave got some history.
Don't say it that way. No, I mean, he and I are pals.
Yeah, right. No.
And I haven't donated a kidney to keep him alive, but we've had a beer together.
Fair enough. But, you know, I thought that you framed his assessment as a guy who's been close for a long time, and maybe that has a little to do with it. I just think that, fourth round pick for Antonio Brown, he could get a DUI on the 8 way to the airport. I'd still want him. I mean, I almost regret saying that, to be totally honest with you, because the DUI.
No, it's out there now. Eat it.
Yeah, no, but really.
Coming out in favor of DUIs is never a good place to be.
No, but he could do something illegal on the way to the airport without hurting anybody, and I'd still be interested. For a fourth rounder, Antonio Brown, I would do that deal at the speed of light. I don't care if he was yelling at my mother while I was making that trade.
Because you would have already made the trade if he's on his way to the airport. So you're already committed.
Right. I'm already committed to that hand.
You know, there are things that he could do that would turn you off to him. It just, you don't see them because you haven't had to live with them.
Right.
I'm trying to be sort of value neutral here. Ron Cook has seen him be a great player and be a guy who walked out on his team, be a phenomenal teammate, and be the guy who, you know, videotapes a post-game meeting. He's seen all of it. And I think he's, like a lot of people in Pittsburgh, basically fed up. And I think that's what I heard from all of it. He's fed up with the subject. So the sooner they can get rid of him, the better he would like it.
Nate is in Gilroy. Nate, thank you for waiting patiently. What do you got?
I wanted to kind of chime in, and honestly, your guest kind of helps reinforce my position here. I just don't think Antonio Brown is not only not worth it, but not even necessary, and I have a couple of rationales. The first is the acknowledgement that he's played on a team with, you know, a Hall of Fame quarterback, with a all-pro running back, and in a system that has been historically a strong defense that have given him so many more offensive snaps than some of his peers, that I think, you know, that there's a reason why he's demonstrated him to be good. And he's a good player. I'm not discounting that at all. But he is a relative product to his system, and in which case I don't think he would thrive in any other environment, or at least in our environment. The second piece is how the Niners don't need him. Considering all the next men up that came through, you know, between all the different injuries that we saw and the fact that we have an entry-level contract tight end put up historic numbers in a world that has Sterling Sharp and Antonio Gates, I mean, we don't necessarily need to spend that much money and that much resources on a guy like that when we have a coaching staff and a methodology that can give us that kind of results from a guy like Nick Mullins, who is undrafted, a third stringer, who would probably have been starting, playing like he was, for 10 different teams. So he's just not worth the investment on the trade piece, unless you can get him for that fourth round, which I think is kind
of
crazy.
See, now all of a sudden, Nate, you are dead. Here's what I love, Nate. You're dead set against it, but fourth rounder? Okay, let's do that. You know, I mean, look, I look at the 49ers as a team that with, let's say Antonio Brown doesn't magically show up. It's not A.J. Green or whoever you're. All right, so it's not going to be Antonio Brown. Put in player X. Without player X, you're looking at Dante Pettis, Kendrick Bourne, and Marquise Goodwin as your starting three wide receivers next year for the 49ers. And I just think that's a tough way to plan to have a comeback, bounce back year around those three talented guys, because there might not be as much talent as you want there. Speaking of not enough talent, not as much as you want anyways, we say goodbye to Paul Garçon. Au revoir, Pierre Garçon. He became Paul Garçon because he was that average. 2 years with the Niners, 64 catches, about 800 yards, one whole whopping touchdown. He played in a grand total of 16 of 32 games and was paid nearly $23 million. It's one of the least productive, most disappointing signings in the team's history.
Well, was he trying to get hurt?
No, he wasn't trying to get hurt. But here's the deal. I don't care if you did or did. It's not about trying, were you? And when he was in there, he was nothing. He was no target when he was in there.
Okay, and here's what makes me nuts. He's not responsible for the money he got. The team said, that's what we think you're worth. We're giving that to you. The fact that for whatever reason, you know, I mean, well, in this case, injury, he didn't live up to that is not just on him. It's on them.
Right,
it's
I know.
Also but on the fact that the 49ers have not had a coherent offense in 4 years.
There's a lot of reasons. There's a lot that goes into the stew of his disappointment. But, yeah, Ray, in a cap sport, you got to live up to your cap number.
No,
in a way,
no, you don't. No, you have to live up to your talent. You won't mind if he exceeds his cap number. But if he doesn't, you have to look at why he didn't. Okay, the first year, he had Blaine Gabbert for the first 11 games. Both years, he had injuries. He failed to achieve what you thought a healthy Pierre Garçon would achieve because he wasn't healthy. So to me, the idea that he failed to live up to it doesn't make sense to me.
It's
if you
want to
say the 49ers made a mistake, then you could say that. But it's not because he didn't want to be productive or that he was on a team that was productive, but he made them less productive.
I know he made no choice to fail. Like, okay, you don't need to explain that to me. I understand that if it were up to him to flip the coin, it would always come up heads, I'm awesome. But that's just not the way it is.
But it depends on how you choose to blame. He
was signed to be a premier primary receiver in an offense, a main target, a primary weapon. And he never lived up to that for a series, much less a game, much less a season, much less half a season.
Well, then maybe that's the 49ers' failure for not understanding what he was then. I mean, for whatever reason, the team has to own this. I don't think he does, because I don't think there was anything about his performance that said, I don't want to be good. He was on two teams that, frankly, weren't very good at throwing the ball. All right? I mean, that's just a fact.
True.
That's not on him. Because football is not about individuals. It's about how they interplay with each other. Why do the Patriots have six rings? Is it because they have nothing but Hall of Famers on offense? No, they have one Hall of Famer on offense. Why does it work? Because they all work together. They are all in a scheme that makes them work. And they have a phenomenal quarterback that helps them all be good. Pierre Garçon had none of those things here. So it's not on him. It's on the organization.
Right. George Kittle
That's
had none
all
of, but George Kittle had none of those things and even less experience and broke records under the same circumstances that the other guy couldn't even have a successful game in.
Okay, but was it or was it not true that that was Nick Mullins' favorite receiver?
It was. It was a safety blanket, no doubt.
Okay, so, I mean, everything taken has to be put into context. George Kittle has been phenomenal for them. Again, though, put him on another team with a different quarterback. He's not George Kittle. There might be some places where he'd be even better. Put him in New England, he might be better than Gronkowski. Put him in Buffalo, you'd never hear from him again. He was playing on a team that had no running game and a third-string quarterback, and he still ended up with the lion's share of the catches. All good on him. But everything's in context. You know, again, Pierre Garçon, he's a guy who didn't work out. But when you frame it like he didn't live up to his contract, maybe the 49ers overpaid him. I never hear that one. I always hear he didn't live up to his number. Well, it wasn't his number. It was the team's number.
Well, then how would anyone ever be a bust? If no one's ever responsible for the money that they've been presented
no,
by a team.
No, people can be responsible, but you have to figure out what the context is. Ryan Leaf's a bust because he chose time and again to screw his career up. That's a bust. Adrian Peterson was fast-tracked for the Hall of Fame, and then he decided he was going to brag about using a switch on his child. You know, that's on him. You know, all these, you know, you can pin a lot of things on players, but a guy who gets hurt and prevent, so he can't play on a bad team is not somebody that I would say is responsible for his failure.
Okay. I will just say this
then. I win.
Pierre Garçon was awful, and I think we just had our first fight here on Valentine's Day. Isn't that nice?
It wasn't a fight. I just had to straighten you out.
Stop it.